WMAL News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. A court-imposed deadline looms for the federal government to argue what the public shouldn't see when the document justifying the Mar-a-Lago raid is released.
The U.S. Department of Justice has until this coming Thursday to propose redactions to the affidavit used in support of a search warrant carried out at Mar-a-Lago earlier this month. Lawyers for President Trump are advocating for a full and unredacted version of the affidavit to be released, but lawyers hired by the press are the ones who ask the court for the paperwork. The affidavit may contain names of informants who told FBI agents of supposed evidence held at the former president's home. Mr. Trump denies such things. Eben Brown, Fox News.
The new superintendent of Fairfax County Public Schools reacting to news that a man who was a counselor at Glasgow Middle School stayed on the job 2 years after police told the former intendant, Dr. Scott Brabrand, he was a convicted sex offender. Chesterfield County Police say they told the school system in November of 2020 that 50-year-old Darren Thornton was arrested for solicitation of prostitution from a minor. Dr. Michelle Reed tells 7 News.
I think at this point in time, clearly there's an accountability question. And today, as we find ourselves today on August 19th moving forward, I'm accountable to our community to make sure that we have safe schools beginning Monday.
Reed says she learned about it on July 28th and took steps to fire Thornton. The painstaking task of recounting every single vote cast by Montgomery County residents in July's primary continues today, and you can watch it happen.
We will be providing a live stream that's available on our webpage.
It's sure to be a gas watching every vote in the Democratic primary for Montgomery County Executive, all 140,000 of them being recounted by hand as election workers determine whether incumbent Mark Elrich's lead over David Blair will stand. Election Board spokesman Hilberto Zelaya.
We will add dates as needed, but the goal is to finish over the weekend.
John Matthews on WMAL and WMAL.com.
Bethesda Beat reports Blair picked up 4 votes after recounting yesterday, narrowing Elrich's lead from 35 to 31 votes. Prince George's County Police are looking for people involved in a shooting between 2 vehicles on Thursday that killed a 71-year-old woman who was in a vehicle that was not involved. Police do not think Deborah Armstrong was the intended target. They're not sure what led to the shooting on Thursday night near Martin Luther King Jr. Highway and Business Parkway. Prince George's County Executive Angela Alsobrook says the recent string of gun violence in the county is absolutely unacceptable. An arrest is made in a nearly 30-year-old murder in D.C. 58-year-old William Ransford of Southeast is charged with second-degree murder after police say he strangled 39-year-old Deborah McManus to death in October of 1993. Her body was found in a wooded area near 4th and Trenton Streets, Southeast. The giant panda cub at the Smithsonian National Zoo is having a birthday party this weekend.
We are celebrating Shao Qiji's 2nd birthday at the Smithsonian National Zoo and Conservation Biology Institute.
The panda will get a celebrate with a fruitsicle cake, according to the zoo's Pamela Baker Masson, and you're invited in person or you can tune in on the Panda Cam. WMAL Sports, the Nats beat the Padres 6-3. Traffic and weather next on WMAL. Here's Albie D in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
Here's your latest traffic update. In Maryland, I've looked at the cameras around the Beltway. In Prince George's County and in Montgomery County, no crashes or construction on the inner loop or on the outer loop. On 270 in Montgomery County, it's clear between the Beltway and Frederick, both northbound and southbound. Now, in Prince George's County, traveling between the two beltways, either on the BW Parkway or 95, no reports of any slowdowns there. And if you headed to the Eastern Shore, Route 50 between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge, clear east and west. And at the Bay Bridge, 2 lanes headed east and 3 lanes are coming west. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Today, mostly sunny, a high of 88. Tonight, partly cloudy, a low of 70. Tomorrow, a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms in the morning, then showers likely in the afternoon, a high of 85. Right now, 71 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Now, on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
It is hour 2 of the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. Every week, John Gizzi joins us. He is the White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com and Newsmax TV. John, a good morning to you.
Good morning, Rick.
Well, the big primary in Wyoming is done, but Liz Cheney is not done, apparently. She's got $7.5 million left over.
Exactly. And with that, she has already established the record for $15 million. That is the largest war chest ever assembled by a U.S. House candidate anywhere in American history. And that $7.5 million is nothing to laugh at. Quite honestly, she could easily start a presidential campaign, something she's been hinting at since the returns last Tuesday. There are two courses for soon-to-be former Rep. Cheney. Number one is go into Republican primaries against Donald Trump, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, or whomever is in the race. Or she could join the fledgling Forward Party. This is a new third party now in its embryonic stages, its midwives being anti-Trumpers, such as former New Jersey Governor Christy Todd Whitman and former Florida Congressman David Jolly. Whatever her future plans, Liz Cheney is sure to make good on her promise to be visible and forthright about Donald Trump and her determination to see he gets nowhere near the White House. The January 6th commission is by no means done with its investigation, so she'll at least have a few more weeks of daily television exposure.
A lot of people were paying attention to Alaska, but that's kind of a hard one to understand. Explain what's going on in Alaska.
All right. Well, I'll tell you something. The late Dr. Stephen Hawking once said, "I can explain any subject except Brexit." Well, I could say I can explain any subject on American politics except ranked choice voting. But here goes. Mary Peltola, the lone Democrat in the race for the seat of the late Congressman Don Young of Alaska, topped the field with 38% of the vote, followed by perhaps the best-known Alaskan after Santa Claus, Sarah Palin. The former governor and 2008 vice presidential candidate got 34%. And then came Nick Begich III, grandson of the last Democratic congressman from the land of the midnight sun, but a Republican, a conservative, and a very successful entrepreneur. He got 28%. Now, the way this works is that the second choice of Alaska voters will be determined, and then after it's applied, the person who came in third will be eliminated. And then second choices for the eliminated candidate will be applied, and it will come down to whomever comes up with 50% plus one. And that would mean that's the winner of the special election for the seat, but it's played out all over again in November for the full term. I hope everyone gets that.
Very interesting primary coming up in New York this week, pitting two prominent Democrats against each other. How did that happen?
Well, the redistricting knife plays some strange tricks on the map and on the voters. Essentially, they took each side of Central Park and combined them. The Upper West Side and the Upper East Side. What that means is that two senior Democratic members of the House, in fact, two senior members from the Empire State, Jerry Nadler, 75 years old, chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, and Carolyn Maloney, 76 years old, chairman of the House Oversight Committee, both very liberal Democrats, will square off for the new 12th district in Manhattan. Now, recent polls show that there's a surge for Jerry Nadler. Perhaps, as some say, it was the exposure he received as chairman of judiciary when Donald Trump was impeached for the second time. Or it could be that he's made a concerted effort to win women voters, normally a bastion for Carolyn Maloney. Or it could be the endorsement from perhaps the grandest lady of all in New York and the grayest, the New York Times. In any event, we'll know Tuesday.
A familiar name will be front and center in Florida politics, and I thought he was long gone.
Now, you're talking about Charlie Crist, who started off as a Republican in Florida, was elected governor, and then left to run for the U.S. Senate as an independent. That was 12 years ago. Well, he tried to come back for his old job as governor as a Democrat, and then was elected to the U.S. House of Representatives. Now, Charlie Crist will make what many call the last hurrah. One more run at the governorship, and he faces Florida's very formidable governor, Republican Ron DeSantis. Now, of course, this race is going to get national attention because Ron DeSantis is shown in most polls to be the second front-running Republican candidate for 2024 after you know who. Democrats would love to take him out or at least cut his margin and embarrass him before the next presidential election. We'll just see if Charlie Crist has it in him for that one last hurrah.
So the Biden team, of course, doing the victory lap. President came back from vacation just to sign the bill and then went back on vacation. The Inflation Reduction Act. So tell us about the Inflation Reduction Act. Depending on who you talk to, it's not going to reduce inflation anytime soon and may even create more inflation.
Well, as you say, it depends on who you talk to. If you listen to President Biden or the Democrat who made possible its passage, West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin, it will reduce inflation. But this reporter finds it interesting that the administration and proponents on Capitol Hill prefer to talk about other aspects of this legislation beside what it will do to bring down the cost of gas, groceries, etc. For one thing, it raises corporate taxes to 15%, and that is supposed to fund much of the legislation. $369 billion of it goes to climate change legislation and a plan to reduce carbon emissions by 40% by the year 2030. And, oh, yes, $80 billion for the Internal Revenue Service, primarily for enforcement and collection. This is reportedly something the president felt strongly about and insisted be in the final package. Oh, yes, you did say it was an Inflation Reduction Act. Penn Wharton, respected analytical outlet, said, and I quote, "It won't measurably affect inflation," end of quote. And the Congressional Budget Office said its effect on the current raging inflation is, quote, negligible.
So the politics of it, John, the Democrats are going to run and say they're doing all these great things for the country. The Republicans are going to bring up many of the points you just brought up. Who's got the edge here when it comes to the spin, or is it a draw?
It's a draw at this point because no one really knows what the legislation will do when it takes effect. For their part, Republicans feel it's going to be detrimental to the economy, especially when people are paying as much as $70 a tank to fill a small car and when groceries are more than double their size. I haven't even gotten into the bills at restaurants, but they're pretty steep, I assure you. Ronna McDaniel, the Republican national chairman, said the president has just finished off and sentenced to defeat numerous Republicans in the House and Senate who will be on the ballot. The vote for this is one Republicans will use, and we haven't heard the last of this legislation.
Mitch McConnell has made some interesting comments recently. We'll talk about that next with John Gizzi, but first we're going to check the traffic. Al BD is there this morning.
Good morning in D.C. on 395 northbound. Traffic is jammed up between the GW Parkway and Main Avenue. No reports of any slowdowns on 295 or 695 in the district. Virginia side of the Beltway, looked at the cameras. It's clear on the inner loop and on the outer loop. No delays being reported on 66 in Fairfax County, eastbound or westbound. And on 95 in Virginia, between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, if you have cruise control set, lanes are wide open northbound and southbound. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Welcome to the weekend. Temperature-wise today, into the upper 80s and some added humidity as well. But overall, looks like it'll be a dry day for most, just a stray shower or storm. But you'll feel a little of that mugginess. Tonight, partly cloudy, calm. Things will be a little different tomorrow. We'll start off dry, but throughout the day, temperatures not climbing as much, low to mid-80s with some showers, maybe a few rumbles of thunder through the back half of the day. In fact, we'll carry that rain into the start of the work week and school week, so Monday looking a bit unsettled. I'm Stormwatch 7 meteorologist Brian Vandegraaff in the Weather Center.
It's 70 degrees in the nation's capital, 719 on the Saturday morning update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
It is 719 on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. We are talking to John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. The Republicans were pretty excited about the fall prospects for even taking the Senate as well as the House. But the recent poll numbers have shown things tightening up quite a bit. We've seen some of the candidates in some of the states, Republican candidates, not faring as well as one would like them to see. And Mitch McConnell made some comments end of the week, and this is kind of his perspective on things.
I think the there's probably a greater likelihood the House flips than the Senate. Candidate quality has a lot to do with the outcome. Right now we have a 50-50 Senate and a 50-50 country, but I think when all is said and done this fall, we're likely to have an extremely close Senate.
So it kind of sounds like he's writing off the Senate and not anticipating becoming the Senate majority leader. But, John, some question marks as to whether he may even continue as the Senate minority leader.
No, Mitch McConnell is now in his ninth decade of living. He's the longest-serving leader of either party in the history of the United States Senate. And he faces something that is a little bit hard to fathom at this point, but it will become clearer as time goes on. A younger generation of Republican senators who are coming in, Katie Britt of Alabama, J.D. Vance of Ohio, Ted Budd of North Carolina, and other likely winners who go to Congress's upper house are in their 40s or, in some case, their 30s. To have an octogenarian as leader and spokesman is something they don't favor. In addition, one of the worst-kept secrets on Capitol Hill is that Mitch McConnell's understudy, Senate Republican whip, John Thune, 61 years old, is quietly collecting chits to make a bid for leader himself. In any event, the idea of Mitch McConnell as leader in perpetuity is by no means in cement.
We saw the fuss China made about Nancy Pelosi's trip to Taiwan. What happens when a bipartisan delegation goes?
It was a bipartisan delegation, and it also included, significantly, the non-voting territorial delegate from American Samoa, Amata Radawagen. In other words, someone from the Far East who's very concerned about just what happens to Taiwan, because it may affect a U.S. territory, American Samoa. The delegation was led by a significant figure, Senator Ed Markey of Massachusetts, chairman of the East Asia Subcommittee of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. And all told, where it was once a situation in which Taiwan's name was barely mentioned in official documents, and where a president of Taiwan came back for a reunion of his class at Cornell University, this is about 20 years ago, and could barely manage a visa to get in the United States, members of Congress seemed falling over themselves to go to Taipei to meet the president of Taiwan and stand in solidarity with a country that U.S. diplomat, that is not even recognized with a U.S. ambassador. That's important.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. As always, John, thank you very much.
And there'll be more news next week, Rick.
7:24, it's the Saturday morning update on WMAL. Well, James Carville comes out of hiding every 6 months to a year and made some comments. We'll have him for you next. It's pretty funny stuff. Stay with us. Saturday morning update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. Of course, James Carville, senior Democratic strategist, and made some comments to The Hill this week. And I caught the first one, and I'm like, oh, I was enjoying this. But then he had a second one, which wasn't so enjoyable. Here's the one I got a big kick out from James Carville this week, taking shots at the progressives and what it means for the Democratic Party.
We tend to get defined by some overeducated, totally doofus coastal elites that are out trying to write dictionaries or something unrelated to anybody's life. These people have the ability to irritate. They have the ability to come up with really stupid things like defund the police.
Then he turned the barrel in the different direction toward the Republicans.
The problem the Republican Party has is they got really stupid people that vote in their primaries. And when you have that, you're going to get in really stupid people demand to have really stupid leaders. And that's where the Republican Party is now in India.
And that's James Carville. And a fixture on Sunday mornings on CNN, Brian Stelter. Last Sunday is tomorrow. His final Sunday tomorrow. Interesting note, CNN was talking about going kind of more mainstream and more neutral, but I think once the Mar-a-Lago raid took place, I think many of the people on CNN have kind of fallen back into that sort of more progressive approach to the news. Anyway, greatest hits of Brian Stelter, and this is classic, so we thought we'd feature some of that for you this morning.
To understand why so many Republicans have abandoned democracy, you have to hear the poisonous propaganda. What do folks in the reality-based media do in the coming weeks? Biden's secret emails. This is a classic example of the right-wing media machine.
When we're not able to say that Hunter Biden's laptop is a story worth pursuing.
You say we're not allowed, we're not able. Who's the people stopping the conversation? Who are they? Is it possible to make Fox News viewers change their minds about key issues just by having them change the channel? Entire media companies essentially exist to tear down Joe Biden. Can we have an honest conversation about gas prices? Or has the coverage been out of proportion, out of step with the American public? What I hear on Fox is that the media is obsessed about impeachment.
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 Imagine, just imagine if Fox's right-wing host talked about Trump the way they talked about Barack Obama. Dealing with hardship actually makes you stronger. That's what Governor Cuomo said earlier today. That's what I'm going to go teach my kids right now at home.
And one in there that I got a big kick out of was, he said, entire media company out to get Joe Biden. Well, every other media company was out to get Donald Trump for his 4 years of presidency, and now they're all energized once again. But this, I think, was one of Brian Stelter's greatest hits when he's talking to Michael Avenatti. Remember when Avenatti was the hero of the Democrats and taking on Brett Kavanaugh, and there was a lot of talk of Avenatti running for president? Now he's in prison. But here's Brian Stelter with Michael Avenatti.
Looking ahead to 2020, one reason why I'm taking you seriously as a contender is because of your presence on cable news.
Okay. It is 7:30. We've got the news next. Then we're back with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer and K.T. McFarland. Stick around.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. A Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.
News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. Police in Chesterfield County, Virginia, say they told former Fairfax County Public Schools Superintendent Dr. Scott Brabrand in 2020 that they'd arrested a counselor at Glasgow Middle School for solicitation of prostitution from a minor. They notified school officials a second time when they arrested 50-year-old Davin Thornton again this June. Despite that, Thornton did not get fired until a few days ago. Sergeant Winfred Lewis tells 7 News.
It's extremely, you know, unfortunate. It's extremely concerning.
The new superintendent, Dr. Michelle Reed, says as soon as she found out about Thornton's criminal record, she took immediate steps to fire him. Former Vice President Mike Pence saying at the Iowa State Fair yesterday that the Justice Department owes the public a straightforward answer on why the FBI raided former President Trump's Mar-a-Lago home.
Attorney General Garland has to come forward
with all the information supporting this search warrant executed against personal residence of a president, former president of the United States.
Mr. Trump has said the documents the FBI took that were marked as classified had been declassified. Fairfax County Police say they do not think a driver whose car hit and killed a pedestrian in a parking lot Thursday was speeding or drunk. The driver of a Volkswagen got into an accident with a Honda, which caused the Volkswagen to veer off the road and into a parking lot on Arlington Boulevard. 62-year-old Albert Sweat was killed. WMAL Sports, the Nats beat the Padres. Traffic and weather next. Here's Albie D in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
On the Maryland side of the Beltway, I just looked at the cameras. In Prince George's County and in Montgomery County, no crashes or construction. In Montgomery County, on 270 between the Beltway and Frederick, lanes are at speed northbound and southbound. Now, if you're traveling between the two beltways in Maryland, either on the BW Parkway or 95, no delays being reported there. And if you're going to the Eastern Shore on Route 50, between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge, clear east and west. At the Bay Bridge, two lanes headed east and two lanes headed west. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Today, mostly sunny, a high of 88. Tonight, partly cloudy, a low of 70. Right now, 72 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
7:36, it's the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer is with us every week. He is the president of the London Center for Policy Research, the host of the Thought to Action podcast, and the author of Operation Dark Heart. Tony, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Always great to join you.
All right, United States sending more weapons to aid in Ukraine. We'll get to that in a minute, but I wanted to talk about a story that's on the Associated Press this morning. A fire at a munitions depot inside Russia forced the evacuation of two villages near the border with Ukraine. Two civilians reported wounded by Russian shelling near the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant. Both sides trading accusations about fighting near the nuclear facility. It's in southeastern Ukraine. And the question is, there's also a talk the last couple of days that each side was accusing the other of planning a false flag attack on a nuclear facility. What are you hearing about that, and how severe could that be?
Well, no clearer example of propaganda from both sides can be seen beyond this example, this perfect example. Maxar Technology is a commercial satellite imagery firm, independent of everybody, has done an assessment of the power plant itself, and it's pretty much untouched. Plus, the IAEA, basically the International Regulatory Organization that studies and monitors nuclear plants, is going in for inspection. So I think both sides are trying to make a lot out of this. Are targets being hit? Like Russian tents and cities and all that around it? Absolutely. There's no doubt that fighting's going on. But I just, Rick, everything I've seen and looking at the information regarding independent sources, nobody wants to really mess with nuclear power. I mean, it's kind of like, are y'all nuts? Because those things, if they break, don't stay within a very confined space. They go all over. It becomes an international issue. So I think both sides are trying to prompt the other and say, look what that guy's doing. But in the end, I don't think either side's going to do anything, and I think we'll have to look for this independent assessment. But you're going to see this kind of prompting of people getting in each other's face and doing all the stuff around the periphery, but I don't think they're going to compromise the nuclear power plant itself.
Okay, on Friday, a senior defense official told reporters that a new $775 million aid package would be headed to Ukraine, and it includes 15 Scan Eagles. Tell us about the Scan Eagle.
So these are pretty effective tactical drones. They can be used in the battlefield. A lot of folks in the Army have been brought up to use them, our Army, that is. And they're pretty good. These things can be used at a tactical level to really cause some very precise damage in ways that's really hard for the Russians in this case to stop. So I don't necessarily believe this is an expansion. I think this is very similar to some of the classes of drones that Ukraine's been using from Turkey and using very effectively. But the Scan Eagle is a bit better, I think, in technology and capability. It could carry a little bit more and do some lethal damage. So it's not a bad weapon system to add. What's notable, Rick, is this is the 19th tranche of weaponry we've given the Ukrainians. And one of the bigger items in this group is actually something called the HARM missile, H-A-R-M missile. It's an anti-radiation missile, which is designed to go after radar. So this is interesting because this would enable the Ukrainians to actually, as a friend of mine says, poke the Russians in the eye, because this will be able to kind of go over the horizon into Russia and take out radar sites. So this could be an interesting item. This is more often used as an offensive weapon. That is to say that you're preparing to go into, you know, a territory held by someone else to take their radars out. So that could be an interesting item to watch as where that goes when it goes into combat.
Well, you use the word offensive. Do you think Putin, back when he was planning this all out, do you think he anticipated that Ukraine would be launching attacks on Russia? Did he think they had the capability to do that?
I don't think he did. I think in many ways their initial entry plan and timelines, their tables of entry of all the weapons were way over ambitious. And there's two things which have really hurt the Russians. First, their own corruption. All the billions of rubles that were spent on modernizing the military, I think, were completely wasted. And I've reviewed some very credible studies and reports on how the Russians don't even have functional radios. I mean, they can't even communicate on the battlefield. All the amazing things they did against the Nazis during World War II and combined arms activities, they can't do now. It's really tragic. And secondly, I do believe that they thought the Ukrainian government, the politicians, would have a lot less stomach for the war they're in. With that said, everything I read continues to indicate to me that the Russians are making progress, slow but steady, and that the Ukrainians are able to launch some very effective strikes. They did, looks like, a commando strike in Crimea, which resulted in a huge loss of aircraft. I mean, you know, there's been videos of this. There was no artillery within range at the time. There's no aircraft that were on the radar of any international monitoring organization. So the indications are that was all sabotage and very effectively done. But the Ukrainians do not have offensive capacity or force structure that's going to be able to push the Russians back out of Crimea, out of Donbass, or any of these other areas where they've kind of entrenched themselves and continue to expand slowly.
And how would you assess the Russian supplies at this point?
Well, the Russians, it's interesting you should ask that. The ruble's doing amazing, and they're selling their oil. So it's kind of like, you know, they are gluttons for punishment. I mean, there's no doubt that the Russians are just going to continue to put more forces, generate more forces, and put them on the battlefield. It's just they can do it. And there's no downside at this point, because what they're after at this point are the resources in the Black Sea and the Donbass region. That's natural gas and oil reserves. So, you know, I see nothing dissuading them from continuing their effort to gain permanent control of those regions for purposes of exploitation. And I still am on the record saying that we're going to see the partition of Ukraine within the next year.
So we saw the Chinese military exercises in the wake of Nancy Pelosi's trip to Taiwan and during the trip. Now, Taiwan has run their own exercises. What do you see as next in the Taiwan-China issue?
Well, it was interesting during the post-Pelosi visit right after, the Chinese did an effective blockade of Taiwan. And I think that was to make a point. It's like, yeah, if we really want to strangle you, we will. And this is a double-edged sword for the PRC, for the Communist Chinese, because they depend, like most of the world, on Taiwanese chips. But they believe, that is the PRC, that there's more to be gained by gaining permanent control of Taiwan by less intrusive, less militaristic means. And if that means they can kind of strangle the economy a little bit to get ultimate control, they may well do that. And that may be what they're telegraphing right now with some of the exercises the PRC has been doing. So everybody recognizes Taiwan's going to fight very vigorously to defend its territory. The Chinese may be, PRC may be planning a scenario where they basically are able to cut off the government and strangle the people to the point of where they're willing to surrender. I think that's what's in the cards for next year more than an all-out war, but I do believe it's going to come next year for the Biden administration as to go before the American people in 2024.
So. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, what's on the Thought to Action podcast these days?
So we're getting ready to launch a new organization called Project Sentinel. And we do a podcast coming out this week which explains what that project is, why it's important. It's going to be focused on the Bill of Rights, the 10th Amendment, and the need to defend the Republic and try to return to basic values that the Founding Fathers established. So you'll all be able to see that this coming week.
Thought to Action podcast at LondonCenter.org. Tony, thank you as always.
Thank you, Rick.
7:46, the Saturday morning update on WMAL. KT McFarland coming up next, but first we head to the WMAL Traffic Center. Al BD is there this morning.
In D.C. on 295, the Anacostia Freeway, southbound is stop and go between Benning Road and East Capitol Street. On 395 northbound, you'll find it jammed up between the GW Parkway and Main Avenue. On 695 in the district, no delays there. Virginia Beltway, it's clear on the inner loop and on the outer loop. No delays on 66 in Fairfax County. And on 95 in Virginia, you're not tapping the brakes between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, northbound or southbound. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Welcome to the weekend. Temperature-wise today, into the upper 80s and some added humidity as well. But overall, looks like it'll be a dry day for most, just a stray shower or storm. But you'll feel a little of that mugginess. Tonight, partly cloudy, calm. Things will be a little different tomorrow. We'll start off dry, but throughout the day, temperatures not climbing as much, low to mid-80s with some showers, maybe a few rumbles of thunder through the back half of the day. In fact, we'll carry that rain into the start of the work week and school week, so Monday looking a bit unsettled. I'm Stormwatch 7 meteorologist Brian Vandegraaff in the Weather Center.
70 degrees in the nation's capital, 7:47, the Saturday morning update.
News Talk 105.9.
WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
It is the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. KT McFarland joins us, President Trump's Deputy National Security Advisor, board member of the American Conservative Union, and of course, the author of the bestseller, Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, always honored to have you join us.
It's an honor and a pleasure for me too, Rick.
Thank you. And I wanted to talk to you about sort of the momentum the Biden administration wants to put out there now. The media is, oh, well, he just got the Inflation Reduction Act passed. He's gotten inflation down by a couple of pennies. We took out a terrorist. And there's this perception in the media that things are on the right track. And I think there may be another way to kind of view how things are going in this country.
Well, you know, if 95% of the American people think we're going in the wrong direction, even if they disagree on what the right direction is, I think that's a pretty clear indicator that the unholy trinity of the media, the Democrats, and permanent government, you know, government bureaucracy, that they're all thinking the same way, but 90% of the country is thinking in a very different way. So I think that what has the result of that has been that more and more people are not looking at the media, or they're not reading the media. All the things that we used to think of 10 years ago as the dominant media structure that was sort of framing how Americans saw issues, nobody's paying a whole lot of attention to those. I mean, there's a reason CNN is in the middle of a major upset right now. It's because most shows on CNN have lost 50 to 60% of their viewers in the last year or two. That's a business model that's not going to work for CNN unless somebody comes in and gives them a whole lot of money to stay afloat. But that aside, I think it's worth taking a step back and looking at the big picture. How does the world see America? So we're always focused on how we see how we see ourselves. Do we like what the White House is doing? Does the media like what the White House is doing? What's the opposition political party happening? But let's take the bigger picture and say, how does the world see us? I can't tell you how many times I've heard in the last several months, what's happened to America? You used to be the bright, shining star, and you're falling apart at the seams. The political instability, FBI raid on a former president, congressional Democrats investigating Republicans, former president who might indeed be the future Republican nominee, in what seems like a political dogfight and a political vendetta. So it does. It seems like America is two Americas. It's blue America and red America, and there's no longer America. The incompetence of the United States government, I mean, the agencies which seem unaccountable, incompetent, and often at odds with each other, the CDC being the perfect example, this massive push for the Green New Deal with massive spending, massive borrowing, especially from abroad, which essentially at its core is giving up the unbelievable advantage America has with our own energy assets at home while the world faces energy shortages. So it looks like America politically and economically and governmentally is kind of falling apart. That's how the rest of the world sees it. And then in the geopolitics, where do they see America in the geopolitics? Well, losing our technological superiority to China, losing our military superiority to China, in some cases Russia, but China particularly in the South China Sea, the Western Pacific. You know, the Pentagon war games all the time, and a conflict between the United States and China over Taiwan, we lose. And what it's an indication of is that China not only is in a dominant position in that part of Asia, but why is that important? It's because it's the world's most important maritime trade route. We're also losing trade dominance. If a lot of countries are asked right now, even Germany, which, if you had to choose, would you do business with America or would you do business with China? A lot of them would say, well, we'd rather do business with China. It's a more important market for us. We're losing global influence in international organizations. It doesn't seem, you know, 10, 15 years ago, America could really control those international organizations or had a major influence on shaping events. Not anymore. It's China. I mean, look at our champion of Ukraine. Only a couple of European nations, and then even some half-heartedly, support Ukraine. India, Middle East, China, they're all standing with Russia. And then the obvious one, a year later, our shambolic withdrawal from Afghanistan after 20 years of failed foreign wars. And here we are, just hardly a year later, ink is hardly dry on Afghanistan. And already some of our leaders are championing and chopping at the bits for a new military engagement over in Ukraine or over Ukraine with Russia, in China, South China Sea, Taiwan. And so the world looks at us as incompetent. They always thought America was really competent. America trade superiority, well, no longer. America technological superiority, well, no longer. And America energy dominant, well, no longer. Now, I think that's going to have massive long-term effects. I do think it can be turned around, especially with a different president and a different approach, different policies. I do think China is, in fact, headed for some real problems at home. But right now, the perception is that we are in inexorable and inevitable decline, and China's on the rise. And it will take a while to turn that perception around. My old boss, Henry Kissinger, talks about this period of disequilibrium throughout the world. And I think world peace is, we're in a very vulnerable place right now. Supply chain shortages, energy crisis. I mean, ask Germany, which is going to shiver all winter because they won't have the energy. Cyber war and potentially even slip-sliding our way into an accidental war. So I think we're in dire times at home and abroad, and the leadership gang in Congress and the White House, and I would say both political parties, they're the weakest, least principled we've had in decades. So I'm very concerned about the next few years until America figures out what it wants to do in the 2024 election. I mean, maybe we do decide as a nation, we go down the road of the Green New Deal and, you know, and sort of slow and inevitable and inexorable decline. Or we have a very different turnaround like we did in 1980 with Ronald Reagan. But, man, are we in a very vulnerable position for the next few years.
We got a minute or so left, KT. The irony is Donald Trump was a leader. He was a strong president. He projected strength of America around the world. A lot of people didn't like him. I get that. But the irony is that this sharp contrast between where we are now and where we were less than 2 years ago, it's so striking to me.
Well, and I think that it can turn around very quickly. One of the main mistakes I believe the Biden administration made early on was the war on American fossil fuels. because that you know, we were given this amazing advantage by Mother Nature that we have great energy reserves and we have terrific scientists and engineers who created a way of getting oil and gas out of rocks, basically, using 3D mapping, horizontal drilling, all that stuff that was invented here. We figured out how to get oil and natural gas out of rocks. And it turns out our rocks were the best rocks in the world for that. And so for a short and beautiful period, we had energy not only independence from the Middle East and other countries, we had energy dominance. So we could set the price of oil. Now Biden comes in, reverses all of that in a period where the world wants more energy, not less. And as a result, we're tying both hands behind our backs. And that could be reversed very quickly by a new president. In 6 months' time, we could maybe not yet be energy independent and dominant again, but the energy futures markets takes care of the price. And once the price of energy comes down, bankrupts our enemies, makes us rich. Quick to turn around with the right team.
We can hope. K.T. McFarland, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. K.T., thank you so much as always.
Thank you.
That's it for the Saturday morning update. Garden Sense is next. Stay with us on WMAL.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9. WMAL.